Beis Hashem Yisbarach, we begin Perek Shleish of Esrim, the 23rd Perek in Hilchos Isha, the Laws of Marriage, in the Rambam Sefer Nashim, where the Rambam continues with the theme of the previous Perakim regarding the rights that the husband has and the wife has in the marriage, and continuing on regarding monetary agreements that the husband has with the wife. Some of the ideas we're going to discuss in this 23rd Perek is the conditions, the tenoyim, that if the husband has to remove his rights that he has in his wife's properties, the rights that the husband has in his wife's nichsei meloig, regarding the different customs in the nedunya and the dowry, regarding the designating monies of obligations by the shaduchim, and also regarding feeding the wife, the daughter of one's wife. So begin halacha aleph, where the Rambam opens up with, when the husband gives up rights that he has in his wife's properties, which we spoke about in the previous parak. Halacha aleph. Ha'isha shehisnes al ba'ala, so if the wife stipulates on the husband, levatel zchus midvarm shezeich b'mabal, to nullify certain things that he has rights to merit, for example, eating the payrus of her nechasim, or to inherit, which she has a right, as we explained in Perek Yud Beis. So im kasav los, if the husband writes to her in the document that he's waiving his rights, v'idarus, and she's still engaged, kaidim on this one before they get married, then she doesn't have to actually even do a kinyan from him to do like a kinyan sudr, where when she gets that sudr, then the acquisition has been transferred. No, whatever he has written to her is going to be standing, because he has not yet merited then at the time when they're just engaged. She could stipulate that he will not merit it when they get married. But if he's writing her this pardon after they're already married, then she has to go ahead and actually acquire from him, because then he already has the rights, and then he's like a partner, and a partner cannot just remove themselves by just removing. They actually have to do a kinyan in actually getting rid of what they have to give it and be maknit back to the woman. Halacha base. Let's say he stipulated with her, with the woman that he's engaged to, without a kinyan, or after that they're married with a kinyan, that he won't have any rights, any litigation, and statements regarding her assets. But he didn't specify what he's removing himself from, because there are three things that the husband has rights in his wife's nechas. Eating the payrus, she sells it, the sale is void, and if she dies, he inherits her. So what's the halacha over here when he's saying, din advarm ainli b'nechasel? So in machar b'nasna, if she sells and she gives, michra umatnasakayim, so her sale and her gifting is valid. That, for that, he says, I don't have din advarm. Aval oichel perisem kos man shem b'shusa. But that's only one of those three things. But the other one, let's say, regarding eating paris, as long as she's in his domain, he does, because he only gave up the least of his three rights, which is the ability for her to sell, because that's not so common that she's going to sell, and therefore, he doesn't assume that that's going to be the one. That's the one he's saying, I don't have din advarm. But let's say if she dies, he inherits her, and when she still has it, he eats the pears. Now, but if, let's say, that she acquired from him his rights when she was still engaged, she ainly didn't advarm in the chesed, that he does not have rights in her properties, then he has removed himself from the actual real estate itself. Then he doesn't have, even in the Paris, forever. And even he's going to claim regarding the acquisition that he had done with his kala, and he says, I never entertained to say that I'm not going to have Paris because of this acquisition I did when we were engaged. All I thought was that if she's going to sell, it's going to be a valid sale. No one gets married to a woman without expecting the properties that she has. Even if he says that, in general, we don't listen to him. He's already moved himself from the land itself. Regarding the sale itself, you wouldn't have to go out and do a kinyan from him because she's engaged. And then the kinyan is only doing to make it stronger what she has. Oh, which should help that removal is even going to be for the eating of the payrus. But yes, if the kinyan was after the marriage, oh, then you need the kinyan, as we mentioned before, and you're right, the kinyan would only help, as we had mentioned, regarding if she sells it. But if she's engaged, when you don't need a kinyan, and they do a kinyan, oh, so that's taking it to the next level, that's saying that he's removing himself from the gufa karka, and then he doesn't get anything, he doesn't get even the oy achilles peres. Halacha gimel. Let's say his name, or let's say he stipulates with her with the his kala, even without a kinyan, which we said that works, and he specifies that he won't eat the payrus of her nechasim, which, oh, if he says unspecified, we said it means the sale. But here he specified he's not going to eat the payrus of her nechasim. How is it in oichel perisem? So that's the stipulation. He does not eat the produce. But you do is you actually sell the payrus, even if she doesn't want, and you buy real estate with it. And you buy land, and then he eats the pears of that land. Only thing he removed himself was from the pears of this nochasim itself, but not the peri pears. So what you do is actually you take the pears, you sell it, now that becomes karka, and now the pears of that is peri pears, that he never removed himself, that he gets. Now, let's say his name, let's say he stipulates with her, he's not going to eat the pears of nochasim, but the peri pears, and not the pears of the pears. So you know what you do? You do one step further. Look at the pears, become them karka. So you sell the pears and you buy karka. But look at the pears karka too, and then you take the pears of that karka, become them karka shnia. And with those pears, you buy a second piece of land. Ah, voicha pears elu eats the pears of those lands. Shame, peri pears, because it's the produce of the produce of the produce. Which, because when he was pardoning her, he only mentioned peri pears. And what he doesn't mention, he still has rights to. So therefore, you sell it like he has rights to get the peri pears. And the Tamet so too constantly achayasne that it will continue. If he says peri, you'll do one more peris than that, and he'll have the peris of that. But this continues achayasne until he stipulates with her shalay you loy peris, loy peripersim adlo oilam, until he says no matter how far down he's not having any peris. Ah, vachkachli you loy peris, but yeah, then after that he doesn't have any peris in her lifetime. Alamesa Yerushako. But if she dies, then he still inherits everything because the only thing he removes himself was from the peris. But from Yerusha, which one of the other three things, that he'll still have rights to. Now halacha hey, but let's say his name mashal yirshana. Let's say he stipulates the one, I'm not going to inherit you. How is a yirshana? So he doesn't inherit her. Avalecha peres b'chaya, but he only removed himself from inheritance, but he still eats the peres in her lifetime. V'chein his name also to be stipulated with her sheyush mikzas nachas, and he's going to inherit some of the assets. It's the same halacha. Now v'chein his name also to if he stipulates with her she mesab lebundav, she's going to die without any children. Yachas nachasim leisabi, he's going to, don't worry, he's not going to inherit her. The nachasim are going to go back to her father's household. It's not going to be lost from your family because if she has children, we'll go to her children. No children will go back to your father's household. Hakol kaim, then everything stands the way he says it. That was the stipulation. Now, but Al Chavav says, but when we say all this that yes, if he stipulates that he's not going to inherit her, he won't inherit her. In shehisni makanim shetinasa, only if he makes this condition before they get married. Because inheritance comes to a person not from his own family, like here when he just gets married, it's a new thing. You could stipulate that you will not inherit it before the time that it was fit to be his. You could remove yourself that it'll never even start. But if he makes this condition after he was already married, so then this condition is void, because since this inheritance now would happen automatically if she would die now, so he can't just do viter, he can't just go ahead and pardon it. The Yerushena, and rather he inherits her, Kamesh Rabbanan, like we explained previously in Perikid Beis, that any condition regarding inheritance is void, even though it's Davash HaBem Mamon, which you could even do a Masha Kasa Batayu, is because it says in the Pasal Chukas Mishpah, which says that it has to be this way, and this the inheritance will happen, even if you're stipulating otherwise. Halacha Zayin. Let's say Hisnima Achar Nisu, and he makes a condition with her after they get married. Shaliyi Loi Din Adram in the Chazad, that he's not going to have any rights, any litigation regarding her assets. The pears of pears going on forever. Whether she's alive or that she's dead, so then he doesn't need pears at all. But if she dies, he does inherit her, like we explained in the previous halacha, because like we said, regarding that, the inheritance was going to happen. You cannot make a condition otherwise. Now, but let's say he had made this stipulation with her before they got married, then yes, he would be removed even from inheriting her. Now, halacha ches, the Rambam continues regarding the expenses that the husband spent on his wife's nechsem lug regarding getting that money's back. As the Rambam says, halacha ches. Habas shaytzi etzois al nechsem lug. If the husband spends expenses on his wife's nechsem lug, which is basically hers, he just gets to use the pears. So bein shaytzi mat vachal pears, whether if he spent a little bit and he used all the pears, he had a lot of pears from his wife's fields, or bein shaytzi habu vachal pears mat, or whether he spent a lot and he only had a little bit benefit from it, and even if he eats just one dried fig, but in an honorable, dignified manner, like eating by the table, not out in the street or in the fields in a more of a temporary way, or he ate one dinner, even not in an honorable way, which is more, so even though it wasn't done in such a dignified manner, and even if he didn't take from the pears from our field, regarding the expenses that he did, it's just one bundle of vines, from the grapevine, what he has spent, he has spent, and what he has eaten, and when he divorces her, he cannot go ahead and claim his expenses because that was compensation for what he gets to take from the pears. halacha test. So, let's say she inherits monies from a faraway place. And he has to spend so much money's expenses for the importing of those monies. Oh yeah, or till he was able to extract the monies by who was by. And he finally buys land with those monies. And they eat pears like the measurement that we mentioned before. No matter how small it is, as long as it's that minimum amount of what's considered having benefit in the pears. Whatever expense he spent, if he spent thousands and thousands, what he ate, even though it was maybe only tens of dollars. Now, but let's say he spent money on his wife's netzim look, but he didn't have any benefit, didn't need any of the payers. Where he ate less than the measurement, then so then we evaluate how much has the properties gained. We ask him how much money did he spend. We do a cost benefit over here. If the gain is more than what he spent, then he swears by holding a holy object, how much did he spend? Then he takes the expenses. But if what he spent on his wife's asset is more than what the gain was for his expenses, then he only gets from how much he spent according to the amount that it went up in value with together an oath. So he could then get his expenses if he didn't have any benefit. But again, it's not going to be more than the shevach of how much it increased by the expenses that he spent on it. Now, says the Rambam, when we say this, that is what he spent, and what he ate, and they're going to counter each other, no matter what the discrepancy is b'makarish, is a regular man who's divorcing his wife. But if a woman's rebelling against her husband, and she wants to be divorced from him, then even if he ate a lot, which generally, even a little bit would counter what he spent. No, here, even if he ate a lot, so we evaluate how much did he eat. We take that away from what's fit to come to him, min ha'itzah, from the expenses, which is more than what he ate. After that, he swears, and he takes it. Why? Didn't we say that even if he spent who knows how much, that then it's going to cancel out, even though, let's say, the shvach might be very little? No, because here is different. Shalai hiknala, because he did not acquire to her the amount that he was spending on her stuff. That she should take it and leave on her own, which that's what she's doing over here. She's rebelliously leaving the marriage. Because even the gift that he gives her, she has to give back, because he doesn't give it to her with the intention that she's going to leave on her own. So therefore, here, you're going to go ahead and give him back the expenses. You'll minus how much you gain, but you give him back the expenses in even in this situation, because she's leaving on her own. And another exception is also if someone spends expenses on the assets of his wife that's a minor, where her father is not alive, but her brother and her mother marry her off, and then she does mean, which is a rabbinic, since it's a rabbinic marriage, rabbinically we allow her to leave on her own. So then, so we see how much did he eat, how much did he spend, and how much was the gain. And we evaluate him like a sharecropper, which, based on the laws of that country of the sharecropping, it's either a third or a quarter from the gain. And that's how we evaluate him, Shahari Bishus Yared, because he had permission to go ahead and work on this field, like any husband who works on his wife's assets. And the Chacham instituted that this husband should take like a sharecropper, so that he shouldn't just leave alone this field and just eat it and not make it any better, because he's afraid. Well, she's 10 years old. She might leave in a year from now on her own. She can do whatever she wants to. But if you value him like a sharecropper, then there's no loss, because he thinks maybe she's not going to do mian. And then, of course, it's good for all of us. And if she does do mian, so I'm going to take it anyways according to the effort that I put in, where I get a third or a quarter of the benefits of the profits. Now, Halachi Rav, the Rambam continues with the laws of the Nedunya of the dowry. Said the Rambam, Minhoges Rabbis Yesh Ben Nedunya. There's many different customs regarding the Nedunya, which is what the wife brings into the husband when they get married, which the husband accepts some responsibility to give it back to when they get divorced. So Yesh Mekayim Shenogesh Yichtav Ksubas and Nedunya Yes Al Demel. There are some places that the custom is that they write in the Ksuba, the Nedunya, the dowry that she's bringing in, more than really what the value is, either by shlish, or by a third, or by chemish, or by a fifth, or by mezzo, or by even by half of that. Let's say the nedunya is really worth 100. They write that she actually brought in 150. And they're doing this. Why do they write it more than what was really actually brought in? So that it should look like a lot in front of the people. So therefore, when she's going to come to collect her ksuba, I'm going to collect only 100, because that's how much it really is. We know how much they really inflated. Now, the Yeshma Kamash Nogu looked at Pachas. Actually, interesting. Some places actually write less than what was actually brought in, so that it shouldn't look like everyone should say, "Wow, look how much is going on." Downplay it a little bit. From Haskel Abalei B'Meyan, therefore, if it was written in the document that she brought in 100 of Kalim, of vessels, actually, Nesen the Shavamei Vesim, he actually has to give her 120. Or maybe 150, again, depending on the custom. And because the only right that she brought in 100, but really it was downplayed, it really was brought in more. Now, there are some places that write it actually 100 to 100, they write it as is. So some places play it up, some places play it down, some do as it is. And there's some place that the custom is eaten ish mois lefeha and the dunya, that the man, he gives monies according to the dunya, meaning correlating to the amount that she's bringing in. So accordingly, the man also gives double cuts of a set amount, should discuss by a kala, that his wife could use for adorning herself, particularly by some, she could buy perfume, kizben, things like that. And the ishbu kaimis, there are some places she achtens ishu mishaloi leisha, that the husband, he brings in his own movable items that you have to evaluate their value, that he's bringing in the shalei leisha from his own stuff to the woman. And they join it together with the dowry so that she could use these things to beautify herself as if he received from his wife this large nadunya, but he's really actually, it's actually him giving that to the addition. It's just being shown that it's as if she's bringing it in. Now, with this addition that the man is giving from his own, this is talking about what he's adding to the nadunya. It's not the Tosefes that we write that is he's adding on to the Ketubah, right? He's writing as if he received this amount, she brought in 100, and he's giving 50. Oh, I got 150, but really it's from his own. So since Ram Halacha Yud Beis Hanoisi Stam, so someone gets married, unspecified, it doesn't say exactly what the custom is for this Ketubah. So Kaisa B'Nesi, given the Gemanini, you write and you give according to the custom of that country, of that town. And V'chein Hisha Paskal Hachna. So too, when she's designated the amount that she's bringing in, now listen, this community Gwendina, she should give according to the custom of that place. And so when she ultimately is going to go collect her ksuba after the marriage is over, so you collect from her, for her, what's in the ksuba according to the custom of the Gwendina. Again, depending on how they write it, do they play it up, do they play it down, as it is. And all these things and things like this, the custom of the town is a very primary idea, and based on that is how we judge. But that is, that should be a custom that's widespread throughout the country, then we're going to go ahead and enforce it according to the minik. But if it's a new town that has no minik, so then it goes like how the Gemara says in Ksubas, Daf Samachba. Ram Gittin Halachi Yid Gimel. Ishvi Isha Shoy B'Neim Shaduchim. So let's say you have a man and a woman that between them they already made up that they want to get engaged and get married. Vamala, and he says to her, come out, Machnas, at least how much are you going to go ahead and bring into the marriage on the dunya in the Ksuba? So she says, Kach Lechach, this amount. Vamali, she says to him, come out to Nisli, and how much are you going to give me your evaluation, which we say the shum that he adds on to the Nadunya, cohesively, or that you're going to write for me, that you're going to combine to the Nadunya. So he says, kach v'kach, this and this amount. So that's regarding the man and the woman. And b'chein av, so to go, if let's say it's with the parents. B'chein av, shapasik adi b'nai b'itai, a father that goes and he's designated for his son or his daughter, come out to Nisli b'ncha, he says to the father of the groom, how much are you going to give for your son? He says, kach v'kach, this and this amount. And then the father of the groom says, how much are you going to give for your daughter? He says, kach v'kach, this and this amount. Do the kiddushu, then they immediately get up and they do the kiddushin, they do the engagement, and they didn't stop for anything else. So those obligations have been acquired. Even though there was no actual acquisition. Because these are things that the acquisition is with just the words, without any acceptance of an acquisition. Because of the joy that they have from the engagement of their children, or from themselves, they're very close, and that itself is like a actual kinyan. Now, halacha yudab b'medrumim, when do we say this? B'shapasik of labita, only with a father designated for his daughter, being a time to make a deal, whether she's a minor or an adult. U'pasik of labnai, and the father's doing for his son, u'binisum b'shayinim, and it's the first time he's getting married. Oh, so then that's a great joy. Shatayit shalom kreivetz b'nai, because the consciousness of a person is very close to his son, and from the great joy from this first time of getting married, he conclusively and he is acquiring it just with his words. But if a brother is doing this for a sister, or if a woman is doing it for her daughter, or any other relatives, or even if it is the father, but he's doing it for his son or daughter, but it's the second time around that they're getting married. Oh, then there's no kinyan with these words. Until the actual kinyan from the hand of the one who's promising that amount of monies. Now, look at Tezvav. If the father designates for his daughter, the daughter's not acquired that gift until her husband goes ahead and actually marries her. So the son does not acquire what his father's promising until he gets married. And the reason for that is shekolam paisik, because whoever designates and promises certain monies in the paisik, elamanas lechnas, he only designates it with the intention that on the stipulation that they're going to get married. The fikir, therefore, ha paisik must like a son. Someone designates monies for his son-in-law. And he dies before the son-in-law gets married. The son-in-law dies before he gets married. So now, but they were engaged. So now his daughter is going to do yibum with his brother. That's yibum. So the father could tell the yavam, your brother is who I wanted to give to. To you I didn't want to give to. It's not like the brother already inherited and now yavam who gets the brother's properties inherits it automatically. No, because he didn't have it until they got married. So since he died when they were engaged, although there's yibum, he could say, well, it's still mine, and I wanted to give it to him, not to you. Even the first one is Amarot, ignoramus, and the second one is a Tamo Chacham. Doesn't make a difference. But even if the daughter wants that yavam, the brother-in-law, doesn't make a difference. The father does not have to give to the second one, that of the yavam. Halacha Tazayin. Hapasik Mois L'chassan. If someone designates monies for his son-in-law, and then the father goes to another country and he didn't leave over any property, because if he did, then the courts would go and take from his assets. But he leaves and now there's nothing, he leaves him out to dry. So so the daughter could tell the man who she's getting married to, look, I need pasakti al atzma. I never designated monies on myself. I never promised anything. What could I do? My father left without leaving us any money. Either get married to me without a dowry, or let me go with a get. I mean, because they're halachically engaged, she can't leave on her own, but I don't deserve to be stuck because of what my father promised. And she could say such a thing. But if, let's say, she had money, and she guaranteed for regarding herself, but it turns out she actually cannot come up with the money that she promises a dowry, she has to sit at until she either finds the amount of that she had promised, or until she dies. And says the Rambam, why can't she not exempt herself by being rebellious, which the halacha we had said in Perek Yudal, that if she wants to, she can rebel, and then we force him to divorce her right away. Because if she's rebelling when she's engaged, in this case, the husband wants to marry her, and she doesn't want to. I mean, that's a regular meredes. A regular meredes that, yeah, we could force him to divorce her is because he wants to be married to her. She doesn't want to, she's disgusted by him. So then we force him. But this case, in the Bal Ritzaba. No, it's not true. Here it's not like that. Here the husband does not want her until she gives the dowry that she promised. The he writes a bind to the contrary. Here, in the inverse of that case, of Meredes, here she wants him. So mostly because she says, oh, you can always say, but that's the option. She says, look, either marry me, I have no money, or let me go. Oh, so therefore, that's the opposite of that case. Yeah, there we force him to divorce her. Here we not. Here we force her to come up with the money, or she dies as in this state of igun. Now, when we say this is Begidoyla, only if the girl who promised the money was an adult. But if she's a minor, that she promised on her own that she's going to come up with money as a dowry, then we force him to give her a get, to divorce document. Or get married to her without a dowry. And the reason why this is because since she made the stipulation as a minor, her stipulation has no standing, and therefore she's not bound by that condition. Now, Lachid Zandaram continues regarding the obligations that the husband has to feed his wife's daughter. Halachi Yitzayin, Hanoisi Isha. Someone marries a woman, a Paskimai, and she made up with him, she is Zanez Bita, that he's going to feed her daughter from a different husband, meaning his stepdaughter. Kach v'kach shan, for that and that amount of years. So Chayiv Lozen, Lysen Shon, Shekibel Asbet, so he has to feed that daughter for the amount of years that he accepted on himself. But that is, she asked no Adab Zeb, Bishas condition, that they made this condition at the time when they were getting engaged, because of the joy of their marriage, he concludes that he went and he was Makna. But if they were doing this not at the time of the actual Kedushin, and it's before the marriage, that's important, so a kinyan will help, so then it's Achik Miyadi. Then it's until she actually does a kinyan to get it from him. Oh yeah, Sheikh Tamashtawa writes in the document of the case, but I think similarly, like we say in the laws of commerce about what's as an available kinyan. But without a kinyan, it's only a Kedushin. With a kinyan, is before Nisuan. And after that, then that doesn't help even the Kenyan, because it's not a set amount of monies. Now, let's say she gets divorced. In those years, the marriage didn't last a long time. He had promised her, let's say, to feed her daughter for 5 years. And now, 2 years later, before the end of the 5 years, he's divorcing her. And now she gets married to someone else. Now, the second marriage, or third marriage for that matter, when she's getting married to this other person, she also makes him promise that he's going to feed her daughter. Shalo yemi rishon. So the first husband cannot say, okay, look, I'm tevel lebeis hazuna. If she comes to my house, the stepdaughter, which she originally was, because he was married to her mother, if she comes to my house, I'll feed her. No, he can't say that. Elamolchem is in the cell. Elamolchem sheisha mima. Rather, he has to bring the food that he promised to feed her for those years to the place of where she is with her mother. And chelo yemi shneim. Also, the two husbands, the former and the current, cannot say, look, Harein Zan Nezikachas, we'll feed her together, because we both made up. No, Elechad Zan, rather one of them has to feed her, Vechad Nesla Dumei Mezainas, and one of them has to pay for the value of that of how much food he had promised to give her for those amount of years. Halacha Yudches. Let's say Nisa Bas Betoches Manzel. Let's say this daughter, who's been promised from one husband to another husband, she gets married within the amount of time that they had promised they're going to feed her. Habal Chayv Mezainas says, so the husband, as every husband, has obligation to feed her. Ubali imash neim, and her mother's two husbands, both of them, each one has to give the amount of food that they had promised to feed her for those amount of years. Now, mesu elu shapaska lozen isa. Let's say those men, those her two stepfathers, that had promised to feed her for those years, if they die, so imkanumi adam, if they had a kinyan from them regarding this guarantee that they're going to feed her, oishachiv atzma bishtar, or they obligated themselves in that document, sarizik kabal chayv bishtar. I mean, she's like a creditor, but if this was a kinyan and there's a document, so she's like now a creditor with a document. Oh, then b'terefes mezeneseho, then she could even collect the food that they promised, what she's anyways getting from her husband, but there she has debts on two of them. She could collect min nechsei hamashabadim, even from lands that were encumbered that they had sold to other people, atzeves manchapaskan, until the end of the time, that they guaranteed that they're going to feed her. But let's say they had guaranteed at the time of the Kedushin, and there was no Kenyan, which that is one of the two ways that it does work, but at that time there was no Kenyan, then these are things which are not given over to be written, which these are things that, as we said, at the time of the Kedushin, it's not written down and there's no set amount. So here in this situation, you should not collect her mezainis from the Chasim HaShabadim, because those are things that there's no Shibud on, because it has no set amount, but she does collect from the inheritors like a milvah peh, because it is an oral loan. There is an obligation that they gave her, which you did not need a kinyan, and they're obligated, but again, if they die, those are cases that you would not be able to collect from the chasim shabbatim.